All right, welcome to the Free Stretch, first off-season show edition. We are staring right at it now, and not only that, but we are in it. As the Super Bowl has passed, it's time to look ahead to the 2023 season, and we're going to get to a bunch of things today involving the Super Bowl. We're going to get to a bunch of things involving the Bucs' new offensive coordinator that just got hired in the last 24 hours. I'm glad I didn't record yesterday because I would have had to redo a bunch of stuff. And we'll look ahead to the draft, all kinds of stuff. But that's the mode we're in right now here on the Free Stretch. So thank you for joining us. I am Bobby Fenton. This is JoeBucksFan.com. And thanks to the Joes for giving me the platform. As always, it's a privilege to be on the single best place for Bucks coverage anywhere. And always a pleasure to have you guys taking the time to fire up the show. So it was a fun game. I mean, we got what we hoped for out of the Super Bowl, and I'll talk about the Bucs offensive coordinator thing in a moment, but just to recap real quick, and we're not going to go over the Super Bowl a bunch because it's been done to death by now, but I just want to go on record on the show, okay? I have no issue with how anything was officiated in that game, up to and including the call that everybody's talking about on James Bradberry, the hold, and it was fine. It was disappointing, of course. We all wanted to see, I mean, just if you're a completely neutral observer, and you didn't care who won, and you didn't have a bet on the game, or your Super Bowl squares, or something like that, and you're totally just watching the game as a football fan, what were we all rooting for there? We wanted to see the Chiefs probably settle for a field goal, right? A touchdown would have still been possible for the Eagles to go get their own touchdown, but it would have been harder. We wanted to see the Chiefs get a field goal there, with time left. Eagles get the ball. Now they can go back down. Maybe they'll get stopped and the Chiefs will win. Maybe they'll kick a field goal and go to overtime, or maybe they'll score and they'll win. It was all on the table. And then, of course, the holding call there gave them a fresh set of downs, allowed them to run more clock, and they kicked the field goal without the Eagles ever getting the ball back. So it was a little bit disappointing as a football fan, purely observing the game and hoping for the most exciting finish possible. I get that, okay? I totally get that. And right when it happened, I'm watching it, and we're all watching it, and then they show the quick replay, just the field-level view, and you're looking at it, and you're like, I don't know, that didn't seem that bad. Like, come on, man. You know, we had this whole game, there was no real bad officiating or controversial officiating, and now we got to have something just like it seems like we always do. But then they showed a couple more angles, and, you know, it being the Super Bowl, they've got more angles, and over the amount of time that has passed since then, it's pretty obvious that it was the right call. And I've gotten most of the people that I've talked to, or when I've tweeted, people who have tweeted back at me or whatever, you know, they all seem to agree. I've had a couple people say, oh, you can't call it in that situation, blah, blah, blah. But here's the thing you got to understand about holding, okay? It's not a ticky-tack foul. It affects the play. I don't mind any call that is called when something truly affects a play. What you hate is when it didn't even have anything to do with the play. It feels like they're just calling something that's letter of the law instead of spirit of the law. That always bothers me. I don't know if it bothers you too. But in this case, I mean, when you grab anybody's jersey, first of all, you're always leaving yourself open to that. And he grabbed his jersey, so it wasn't like he put a hand on him and didn't do anything else. He literally clutched jersey. You're always at risk for being called when you do that. And second of all, I mean, you don't have to have played sports. You don't have to have been a professional wide receiver or even played at a high level to know. You know, when you watch these wide receivers and they make a cut, especially when it's a complete change of direction cut, so you're going one way and you cut and you go completely the opposite direction like Smith-Schuster was there, you know, that's based on quickness, and that first step out of the cut is an explosion. You're going ba-boom! You stick that foot in the ground, you go the other way, and you're gone. And it only takes that little bit of separation. So when you grab the jersey, you bleed all of that, which is the whole point of grabbing the jersey. It's why DBs do it and try to get away with it. And then people say, oh, well, did you see where that throw landed? It was way out. It was never going to be. He threw the ball before the hold even happened. It's all based on timing. And if he makes that cut cleanly and explodes out of that first step, then he's up the field and the DB's in his wake in a trail of dust behind him. That's how these guys, that's how it's worked. That's how you do it. And so the hold slows him down. And yeah, it looks like they're quote-unquote engaged. In reality, he held them. So that's all I'm going to say about it. I'm not going to do the whole show on that one call. It's already been talked about plenty, but it was fine. Like I said, a little disappointing we didn't get to see the true ending. But looking at that game, I mean, that was a complete ass-kicking in the first half. The Eagles just dominated the Chiefs. And to only be up 10 was actually a little bit disappointing. And then, of course, the turnover, the fumble return for a touchdown, that was really all that kept the Chiefs in it in the first half. Then it happened again in the second half, this time on another bang-bang play. They ruled it an incomplete pass, but the Chiefs came out and dominated the second half. And both quarterbacks played really well. I thought Jalen Hurts accounted for himself really well, and you know he's going to get a lot of money, as he should. And it's still amazing to me watching the Eagles this year, and like I've talked about before on the show, how quickly things can turn around in both directions, for the better or the worse. But I remember that playoff game last year in the wild card round here in Tampa where the Bucs just absolutely thumped the Eagles. It was 31-0. Was it in the first half or early in the second half? It was already 31-0. I think the final ended up being 31-15 or something like that. But, I mean, the Bucs just, it was like, whatever, get these guys out of here. Let's get to the real football next week with the Rams, you know. Like, that's what it felt like. And that same Eagles team, not that much different of a team, really, just a year better, a year more experienced, whatever you want to call it. This year was one of the best teams in football and was right there on the doorstep of the Super Bowl. So, tough beat for them. The Chiefs are deserving champions. I had a good time watching the game. I did end up going to a Super Bowl party that was with people that I don't know that well, but well enough, and didn't have any problem. Watched the game, was able to pay attention. Everybody was pretty dialed in, and it wasn't like one of those things where the Super Bowl was the background and people are using it to catch up and talk. I mean, everybody was pretty into it. I enjoyed the party. And the halftime show, you know, whatever, fine. I like Rihanna. I got a couple of her songs on my Spotify. No issue there. A lot of the women were speculating about her pregnancy or something like that. I guess, did it turn out that she's pregnant? I don't follow this stuff, but I know that some of the ladies there were thinking like she was going to announce a pregnancy in conjunction with the halftime show. That may or may not have happened. I don't pay attention. But anyway, it was fine. It was a good night, and it was a good ending to the football season. And like I said, the Super Bowl is always really exciting. It's always fun. But it's a solemn occasion to a degree because it is the end of something. And so here we are now in the offseason, and everybody goes back to 0-0. The Chiefs had their championship parade. It's all done. We're looking ahead to the draft and all the coaching changes. There's still some OC positions open. All 32 teams have a head coach now, and your Tampa Bay Buccaneers have an offensive coordinator. That is Dave Canales. He is the offensive assistant with the Seattle Seahawks. He's been many things, from wide receivers coach, quarterbacks coach, passing game coordinator, not the offensive coordinator. And in fact, if you want to go into the things that are maybe giving people pause today about this hire, you can go all the way back to high school, community college where he has coached, working his way up all the way through the ranks to small college, then you know, to bigger college, then to the NFL, every single level. Dave Canales has never, ever called a play, ever. He's not, hasn't been a play caller. First time he calls a play this year will be that'll be it. That's his first play call. Like, he's never called a play. So, people might be saying, oh my God, you know, let's say this first of all, okay? We talked about it last week. The Bucs didn't have a ton of options. I think they actually did fairly okay here. Let's be honest. I mean, you're looking at a team with not necessarily a lame duck head coach. That's not the phrase. Todd Bowles is not, like, guaranteed to be fired. But certainly a head coach in a less than secure position and a quarterback situation that has literally nobody on the roster except for the third string inactive guy who has never taken any meaningful snaps and, in fact, only took his first NFL snaps at all in Week 18 this past season and barely did anything and hasn't looked good in the preseason either. And that's the only quarterback on the roster with a staff that a lot of people think may get fired if the Bucs don't have a good year this year. So this isn't a place where people are flocking to come be the offensive coordinator. It's not official, but supposedly Todd Monken and Dan Pitcher were the two guys they offered the job to. I'm not reporting that they offered the job to them, saying that. I would be surprised if they didn't, and supposedly they did. And those guys both, Pat Monken, in fact, went to Baltimore. He's the offensive coordinator there now, and Pitcher is still where he was in Cincinnati. So fine, I mean, those are two guys I would have definitely offered the job to myself, and if I was those two guys, that's a job I definitely would have said no to if I was them, given the options they have. So it makes sense on both sides. So, you know, the whole thing ended up being 10 candidates they interviewed. A few of the guys got two interviews, but 10 people were interviewed It took just shy of a month. It was 27 days. Dave Canales, 41 years old, has been there with Seattle and actually has been with Pete Carroll. He's really been with Pete Carroll for years and years and years, going all the way back to USC. He's just kind of followed Pete Carroll wherever he's gone. He was a college wide receiver at Azusa Pacific in the late 90s, early 2000s. Went into coaching after that, started at the high school level, community college, like I said, worked his way up. And obviously the big feather in his cap is what Geno Smith was able to do this year after coming from nowhere, winning comeback player of the year. Everybody thought he was an also-ran, barely worth a backup gig, much less the starting gig. But Seattle, after they lost Russell Wilson, didn't opt to replace him. Geno Smith was backing him up. They didn't draft anybody when it happened. They said, okay, we'll ride with Geno Smith. And he went on to be a very, very effective quarterback this year. Like I said, won NFL Comeback Player of the Year. Put up huge numbers, 30 touchdowns. Yeah, almost a 3-to-1 TD to interception ratio. All that good stuff. And so, that's the big thing with Canales. He's a pretty well thought of guy. And obviously people are going to say good things that know him, but, pretty well thought of guy by people who have both played for him and coached with him. The Seahawks, for their part, top 10 in scoring four of the last five seasons. Like I said, you can decide how much you want to attribute to him or to the offensive staff there, of which, again, Canales was not the main play caller. And listen, a couple things. First of all, just because something has never happened, or in this case, a better way to say it would be, just in case someone has never done something before, just because of that doesn't mean they're not going to be good at it. Every single great play caller, every single bright offensive mind you've ever heard of had never done it before at some point, and then they started doing it. So he may be a phenomenal play caller, and all that may work out just great. We don't know, you don't know either way. Obviously, there's no track record to go off to with play calling. It's not like the play calling we had this past season was anything to write home about, right? So, he might end up being great. You can't say either way. I will say this, though. Let me say this, and I'm not comparing myself to anybody at any level at all, because I'm not at it. But I'm coaching my son's flag football team for the first time this year. And, he's in fifth grade now. He's never wanted to play, and this year he finally won. I've been wanting to play for a while, but he finally wanted to play. So a lot of these teams in this flag football league, and I won't bore you with the details of youth flag football in South Tampa, but a lot of you listening may know about it. It's the Under Armour Flag Football League. Anyway, it's not like our baseball league or anything like that where we have a draft and we have evaluations and we make sure each team is even. You just kind of make your own teams in this league. Like, you request the coach requests the players. And if you're new like us and you don't know anybody, you get all the stragglers and the outliers and the kids who've never played before. So it's not a balanced league, and we are getting our asses absolutely crushed every single week. We're 0-5. We just scored last week for the first time. The first three games we got shut out, and we finally scored we've scored three touchdowns now, but we didn't have any of the first three games. And I mean, just getting thumped. And my kids aren't bad players, but again, we're new. We're drawing stuff in the dirt over here. Some of these teams have been together for like 3 years. They have playbooks. The coach just whispers to the quarterback, run this, and they all know what to do. My kids, we don't know anything. I have to literally show every player what route on what plays. And finally, I've just said, you know what? F it. Every second or third play, I say, hey, we call it playground. I go, run playground. Playground means just like you're at school. The quarterback says hut, everybody just go get open. And you know what? We're getting more yards on that play than any of the plays I've drawn up. And that's my point. It's hard. I have coached high school football, like actual high school football. My uncle was a high school football coach for 40 years. I assisted him. I was the wide receivers coach. But that's different than being the play caller. I didn't call the plays. This is the first time just calling flag football plays. It's really hard. Like, you can't focus. You're like, it's all moving fast. The play clock's only 30 seconds. And every play you run, you can't even think ahead much, because every play you call, whatever happens on that play changes what you would have done. You can't say, oh, okay, I'm going to call this play. Then next, I'm going to go this. Well, oh, okay, it's incomplete. Now it's, 3rd and 15. Oh, hey, we broke that one for 30 yards. Now we're first and goal at the 6. You got to go call it. And I'm not saying this has anything to do with NFL play calling, except I would imagine NFL play calling is like a million times harder than that. And this is hard. It's not easy. And I like to think I know a little bit about football, but I don't care who you are. Like, if you've never done it before, play calling is its own animal entirely. It's different than just coaching players in practice. It's different than subbing guys in and out. It's different than all that. It's an art. And so I'm not saying any of this means that Dave Canales won't be good at it. He might be. It is a little bit, what's the word? I don't want to say disconcerting, because it's not disconcerting. It's a little bit maybe noteworthy that he's never called plays before. And I know a lot of people are thinking, oh, whatever. This just goes hand in hand with what we already thought. The Bucks suck, and they're tanking, and nobody wants to be here, and we don't have anybody, and we're just going to go out and be terrible and, you know, blow it all up and fire everybody, and that's what's going to happen. And you know what? That may happen, but I'll tell you this right now. That is not what the Bucks are trying to do. I guarantee you, and maybe the Glazers are thinking it, and they're not saying it, or maybe even Jason Light, but every single player from the head coach all the way through the coaching staff and down through every player, they don't care about that. And they're looking at a division that is not good, all right? Nobody's done anything crazy in the division. I really like Carolina's hire of Frank Reich, like I told you, but it's nothing crazy where you think, okay, the division balance has shifted drastically in the last few weeks. It's still a bad division with mediocre teams that is there for the taking. Do you think Todd Bowles, in what is probably the last chance he'll ever get to be a head coach, at least in the NFL, is thinking about the Bucks' organizational future without him? Like, yeah, well, we'll be bad, you know, but it's okay because they'll fire me and then they'll get somebody else and rebuild. No, I mean, he's thinking, I'm going to go win the NFC South this year again for the third year in a row. And we can. That's what he's thinking. And that's what the players are thinking. If you're a player on the team, you don't care about all that. You care about, you know, the goal right in front of you. So I know everybody's been talking. It's been a popular topic with the Bucks since Brady officially announced his retirement. It's tank mode now. We're going for Caleb Williams. We're going for Drake May. We just hired an offensive coordinator who's never called a play in his life, even in high school. It all makes sense. Hey, like I said, it might be that way, but not by design. I mean, the Bucks didn't have a ton of options, okay? And I think given the options they had, this guy could be decent. And, you know, maybe the whole staff is getting blown up, and I have no idea. I couldn't tell you what to expect for the 2023 season right now, and a lot remains to be seen. Whether it's Kyle Trask, what other quarterback could they bring in? They certainly are bringing in other quarterbacks, whether it's a bigger or smaller name. You literally only have one on the roster right now. So Derek Carr, there's been a lot of talk about him. I think we all know that's not a Tampa Bay thing. So wherever he ends up going, I don't think it'll be here. Then you go on down to the next level on the list. And I'm not even saying these guys are below Derek Carr, because I'm not that in love with Derek Carr, but you still got Jimmy Garoppolo, who Garoppolo is a guy, the NFL being a quarterback league, to have a guy with his track record, to have a guy who has done what he's done, just be out there, he's going to be very coveted, and he's going to be big money. He's not an option for the Bucks either, in my opinion. And I would take him over Derek Carr if I was choosing personally between the two, but either way, I don't think either of those guys are in play. Who I do think could be in play are the names we've already mentioned, Jacoby Brissett, Sam Darnold, Baker Mayfield, down to Gardner Minshew, Taylor Heineke. There's still more. Trubisky, Dalton, Mariota, Jameis. They're all out there. Somebody like that. I mean, I don't think it's going to be Jameis. I'm just saying those are the guys you're talking about right now. And there's one other name that has come up now since the Bucks hired Canales yesterday, and that is Drew Locke, who was brought in to be Geno Smith's backup in Seattle. And so he has been working with Canales, so maybe Canales wants to have him with us. So we have Kyle Trask, Drew Locke. That's obviously not going to inspire anybody, and nor should it. But if that's all they did, I'll say that much. Whatever you think about tanking, not tanking. To me, if you believe what I think they believe, which is, hey, we're still trying to win the NFC South, you should be looking at one of those names, like I said, Brissett, Darnold, somebody like that. Somebody like that, Mayfield. I don't. Whatever you think, Heineke, even Minshew, those are guys you can maybe say, hey, you know, the NFC South sucks, and maybe we can just be really good at defense or something. And, you know, I know, you know, people talking about Seattle, you know, the Bucks are going to start running the ball more now, man, and Seattle did run it. They were never in the top of the league in passing attempts or anything like that, but always, you know, focused on the running game there, and that's a Pete Carroll thing as much as anything. Of course, Todd Bowles is a defensive-minded head coach as well. And obviously, we all want the running game to get better, but I will maintain that if you really want to win in the NFL, it ain't the late 90s, early 2000s anymore, and you're not doing the whole Trent Dilfer Ravens thing. Oh, we're just going to win with defense and run the ball. I mean, maybe you can grind out a division win that way, which maybe is their ceiling anyhow. But if you actually truly want to be good, that's not, you're not getting to the top of the league that way. You know, maybe you're, like I said, 8-9, 9-8, something like that. And you maybe you squeeze out a playoff game. And for the Bucs, it's probably the best we could hope for this coming season. Although, watching sports for as long as we all have, right, we know better than to make absolute declarations, or we should know better. So we'll see how it goes. And as far as the draft, and Joe posted this, okay? This isn't even from some other outlet. This was on Joe Bucs Fan. And Joe was very clear in the article. It's not the preferred thing, but he just put it out there as a possibility. This is the article. JoeBucsFan.com, there are always new articles going up constantly, so it's already like fourth or fifth down the list, even though it's a relatively, I mean, this was posted earlier today. Background of new OC Dave Canales suggests Bucs will focus on ground game in the draft. And I won't read the whole article, but it says, you know, the Seahawks, since Pete Carroll arrived, largely have been a run-oriented team. Joe thinks it's fair to suggest the Bucs will go ground and pound with Kyle Trask at quarterback unless they get a cheap veteran, on and on and on. Could the Bucs be gearing up to take Texas running back Bijan Robinson at number 19? And Joe, again, states clearly, Joe isn't lobbying for this, but if the Bucs go ground and pound, why not go big? I mean, we just saw Pacheco in the Super Bowl, right? What's he, a seventh-round pick being effective? Not just in the Super Bowl, but for the Chiefs. And given where the Bucs are as an organization and all the things they need, literally the last thing I would do on the face of God's green earth is draft a running back with any of my, not just my first round pick, any of my top round picks. Good God almighty, are you kidding me? I know we it may not be good in 2023, but if we're trying to be good in 2024, 2025, on and on, you start working on the most important positions on the football field right now, which you should be doing all the time anyway, but especially in a rebuild. Draft a freaking running back. I'm not saying Joe wants it. I'm not saying this about, I'm saying anybody who's suggesting that, and I hope it's not the Bucs, GTFO. I mean, you look at the Eagles, like, what did they do? Like, they consistently focus on the most important position. Like, the Bucs right now, whether it's up front on defense or whether it's up front on offense, that's where they should be looking early in this draft. They need to draft a stud tackle to replace Donovan Smith or to replace Tristan Wirfs at right tackle in the event they decide to move him. Whatever it is, just stud tackles, stud rush guys, stud nose guys, fine, fine, fine. Corners, fine. That's where it's at, man. All right? So come to me with running backs. Don't come to me with linebackers or things like that. I don't want to, you know, especially running backs. I mean, my God. I hope that. There's nobody saying that this is happening, including Joe. But I just want to throw my two cents in that this is a bad idea. And I wouldn't do it with my second rounder either. Too many needs. We need a bunch of things. Work on those. Get loaded up front. Like I even said, hell, even if it's a quarterback. Not that I'm endorsing any of the, I'm not saying I want Anthony Richardson, I don't. But I'm saying that's the type of stuff. I'd make a list if I was the Bucs right now of the baddest ass offensive tackles and the baddest ass defensive front guys, both interior and on the edge. I'd make those three lists, okay? And then I'd start whittling those lists down with my picks. You know, first round pick, get one off one list. Second round pick, get one off the other list. Third round, and just, you know, whoever's there, get them. However deep you think a draft is at each position, whichever of those three spots is the least deep, I'd get my first round pick and use the top guy at that one because I know I can get somebody else at the other spots and still be good in the second and third round. And that's what I would do. And we've got plenty of time to get into the whole draft thing and all that stuff. We will. But, you know, that, I don't think we need to be thinking about our draft pick in terms of now that we have this offensive coordinator, here's who we should draft. The idea, the picture has to be way bigger than that. All right? It's not like, oh, well, it's just way too of a micro. It's micro versus macro. It's way too of a micro thing to be thinking, oh, we hired Dave Canales. We need to get a running back. Now Seattle ran, so we're going to run. No, whatever. They can adjust to the personnel. And Leonard Fournette can still, you know, he's fine. Obviously, Rashad White is ready to make a big step forward. And on top of that, literally any running back you get in the sixth or seventh round or in free agency could probably give you just as much. I love the guy from Texas. I'm not ripping him. I'm sure he's a fine back. You know, I mean, or I saw him in college. I'm sure he will be a fine back in the NFL. Great, whatever. It's whatever. The running back thing, do we not know this by now that they're so interchangeable and it doesn't make a difference and it's not worth draft capital on running backs? And I'm reading the comments, which I guess, you know, for the most part, that's not representing all of you because most of you don't listen or don't post in the comments, even if you listen to my show or read Joe Bucks fan. But a lot of people are like, yeah, I can see it. Others, I can tell which people listen to the free stretch when I look at the comments, wisely are advising no running backs early. No running backs early. Email me if you want to, bobbygameday@yahoo.com, BobbyGameday@yahoo.com. BobbyGameday@yahoo.com. On Twitter, you can get me at BobbyGameday. Same spelling. I want to thank our good friends at Bill Curry Ford, by the way. If you're looking, now that football season's over, to actually, you know, spend more time on the weekends focusing on your own life, and maybe a new vehicle or a pre-owned vehicle is part of that, and you're looking to start the process, the first step in your process should be to check out Bill Curry Ford. Go to the website, BillCurryFord.com. Remember, they spell Curry C-U-R-R-I-E. So you go to the website, BillCurryFord.com. It's all there. The completely transparent, no-haggle online pricing. You can see everything. You can sort by any category you want to sort for. They've got car, truck, SUV, brand new, pre-owned. You can sort by year, sort by price. Get it whittled down, whatever you want. Or, you know what? Just go to the lot. Go to the showroom, a mile north of Raymond James Stadium on Dale Mabry. And just go in cold and walk in. There's, I mean, tons of inventory. Check it all out. But if you go to the website, you can see it all there too and kind of get an idea. Either way, if you want to stay home, they'll deliver to you just to look at the car, just to test drive it. You don't even have to go. But if you want to go and you check them out, like I said, they've been serving the Tampa Bay area for 60 years plus now over there, a mile north of the stadium on Dale Mabry, and you'll get a chance to check out everything. Whatever you end up doing, whether it's a pre-owned, whether it's brand new, you get the nationwide unlimited lifetime warranty, engine trouble covered throughout the life of the vehicle as long as you're still the one that owns it after you buy it at Bill Curry Ford. So check them out, BillCurryFord.com, and thanks to them as well. So now we hit the offseason here, and we go into these other leagues. I don't think we need two leagues, by the way. I mean, it's hard enough to get one of these leagues going. They haven't even played yet, and I already feel like the XFL and USFL need to just merge and have like one good, solid, minor football league. But they're both going to give it a go. The XFL actually starts this Saturday, which I was surprised. I think it's okay to have a few weeks, like to let it breathe. As much as I love football, and I always complain when there's no football on, and I always say football should be on all the time, I guess I don't really mean that literally, because I'd be okay if we just kind of took, you know, just a few weeks, like 2-3 weeks. I don't need it this weekend is what I'm saying. But I guess they've got their schedules, and with two leagues, they want to get one in and then play the other one. So the XFL starts Saturday. It runs through April. The end of the XFL will overlap a little bit with the beginning of the USFL, which starts in April and then runs into June. And then once we hit June, we got to suck it up for a few weeks. And it's training camp by late July, and we start all over again. And I'm not saying that the XFL and the USFL make it just like football season, because they don't. I try to get excited every year about these leagues, and I say, oh yeah, more football. I don't even care. I just want football. And then I turn it on, and I'm like, eh. And it's not because of the quality of the play. People say, oh, you want to see the best players, and that's what the problem is. No. It doesn't feel like, maybe football season is what it is because of when it is and because it's so short, but it doesn't feel like football season in March or April or May. It just doesn't. And I've played semi-pro football before, which is the same thing. That's when the semi-pro football season is, even then, never felt like it. I was always kind of like, man, it'd be cool to play football in the fall again. High school was the last time I did that. That's when it feels like football season, right? Because I always say this, football season is more than just having football games being played. It's a state of mind, man. And, you know, this time of year, you kind of start to get out of that state of mind. But I'll watch. I know a lot of you may want to watch, too. We'll see what happens. It's certainly better than not having it. I can always not watch it if I don't want to or if I have something else to do. But I like knowing I can if I choose to. But time will tell. I feel like, I mean, obviously, any of these leagues hasn't lasted long. But for having two of them right now, I feel like definitely one of them won't be around for the long haul. We'll see if they merge or if one makes it better than the other or something happens where at least one can stick around in the spring moving into the future. But in the meantime, it's fine. Let's have football on TV. Just keep going in the background. And we got plenty of stuff going on. The weather's going to be beautiful this weekend. Enjoy yourselves. Have fun. There's all kinds of things we can all start to do now. We can internalize, I call it now, you know, instead of thinking about all this outer stuff. Get your house in order, get to the gym more, whatever it is you do, enjoy it, be safe, have fun. I will be back next week. There's not a ton going on right now, but there's always something going on, and soon it's going to be the combine, and we're going to start looking at the draft and all that stuff. So thank you for listening to this week's edition of The Free Stretch, the first of the offseason. Thanks to the Joes for giving me this platform. Thank you to Bill Curry Ford, our good friends over there, for sponsoring the show. I will talk to you guys again. And if you want to get a hold of me, remember, BobbyGameDay@Yahoo.com or on Twitter @BobbyGameDay. Talk to you next show. In the meantime, wherever you are, good morning, good afternoon, good night. Oh, and don't forget, I know the new music and stuff. Don't worry about it. Everybody's not going anywhere. I'm just trying some new stuff, just messing around. All right, so don't freak out. Everybody will be back. Wherever you are, though, good morning, good afternoon, good night, and go Bucks.